Hi, this is Lesbian Nation. I've got a couple of announcements for you. You'll be pleased to know that there's going to be a women's festival at Queens College the week of April 2nd through 6th. And the speakers are going to include Jill Johnston, who rumor has it is a lesbian, Ellen Frankfurt, Naomi Weisstein, Karen Burstein, Lolly and Jean Hirsch. I guess Ellen and Lolly and Jean Hirsch will be doing their number on health and medicine. Karen Burstein is a legislator from upstate. And Naomi's involved, I believe, in the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band. They're going to be workshops and panels on subjects including women and health, lesbian feminism, the arts, politics, and education. There will be a photo exhibit as well as the Lesbian Mother's videotape and Mae Zetterling's The Girls, which is a movie I haven't seen yet, but a lot of people seem very excited about it. It's All Right to Be Women Theater, and West Beth Women will perform. They're two different theater groups. And the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band will play at the Women's Dance. There is childcare available, and you can call 939-7576, extension 23 during the day. That's 939-7576. At night, I would suggest you'd be better off calling at night, is 741-2610. That's 741-2610. If you are interested in getting into acting, the play Coming Out, which is a documentary play about gay people in America, is in need of some new female cast. The play is going to be put on again during Christopher Street Week, Christopher Street Liberation Week. And white and third world women are needed for different roles in the play. Those of you who are interested in getting into acting, who want to audition, call 861-0343 and ask for David. That's 861-0343. Okay, tonight I think I'll play some music for you from Lorien. Lorien is a singer and guitarist, writes her own material. She works on the Majority Reports Collective.
Did you ever wonder why you hear so many songs about men who are tired of their lives and their women and their houses and their crabgrass and whatever, and they have the urge to roam? And they roam by various means. Sometimes it's with a freight train, and more often it's hitchhiking, dummy a ride, on a truck or in a car or a jet plane or whatever. But you never hear about a woman who wants to take off and leave the man behind. So I thought I would correct that situation, and I wrote this song called Why Must the Woman?
I
Tonight I'm recording in the studio with Isabel Miller, who some of you may be familiar with as the author of Patience and Sarah, one of the better lesbian novels.
Thank you.
Unlike some of the trash that I was reading as a teenager.
Oh, that wasn't too bad. I really liked it.
Well, I liked some of the sexy parts, mm-hmm. I have to admit.
They were never quite sexy enough, was it? And they always left a mystery. If I had known... And so on. As though there was really some fantastic occult thing lesbians did that they didn't dare reveal.
Mm. Well, before I came out, I used to feel, you know, that someday I would graduate to the point of all of these mysterious practices that I'd practice on mysterious women in dark haunts in Greenwich Village.
Uh-huh.
Wow. How did you get into writing, period? Not that particular book, but...
Well, I don't know. I sort of always like to read, and I think anybody who likes to read has sort of a feeling about wanting to write. And I was really totally incompetent at everything else. And I couldn't wait table, I had flat feet, and I had to figure out a way to make a living sitting down.
Well, from what I know of Patience and Sarah, you didn't make a living writing that book alone.
No, but I wrote some other books under my real name. Isabel Miller is a pseudonym. I sort of wanted to start over as a gay author, a new name, and so on.
In other words, you were writing straight stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Was it for magazines or what?
They were books.
On what?
Oh, straight stuff. They bore me very much now. I haven't looked at them in a long time.
It's funny, I think one of the reasons that I found it so difficult to get into writing was that the only stuff I could write was gay stuff.
Yeah.
And I was terrified of showing it to anyone.
Yeah.
I used to bury my poetry and change the pronouns.
Yeah.
Did you ever write poetry?
Hardly ever. I've only had about 3 poems in my whole life. Well, when I was a kid, you know, I'd write 3 or 4 poems a night, but they weren't very good. I think that there ought to be a law against letting children publish their embarrassing poetry.
Because of what it feels like when they get older.
Uh-huh.
Except who's to judge?
Good point. I remember some things of mine that were in my high school magazine. That if, in case it still exists anywhere on earth,
you disavow it. It's not yours.
Yep.
When you got into writing, Patience and Sarah, had the social climate changed at that point, or
no, it hadn't.
Then how did you get into the courage to start writing a gay book?
Oh well, I like you, that was the only thing I could do then. Nothing else seemed important to me. I'm not saying that gayness is the only important thing, but it just seemed really important to me. And all I wanted to talk about or write about. I really had this sense of sort of missionary, I guess I'd have to admit. And I wanted to speak for my people, you know. I really wanted to, and I still want to.
Are you still writing gay stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it would be a good idea if we went into the whole story of how Patience and Sarah got published, because from what I hear, it was a real trip.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of fun. When I finished it, I sent it to my agent, and she sent it back to me, like, in 1 week. I mean, she said there was no market for it. And she didn't even try to peddle it. So then I got some friends of mine who knew publishing people to write letters for me, and I sent it to about 10 publishers, I guess. And they all rejected it. And then I decided to publish it myself. And I typed it and had it offset. And I peddled it out of a shopping bag.
I remember those typewritten copies.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that edition the best of all.
There was something more personal, I guess, than the usual publishing route. And then it became kind of an underground bestseller.
Yeah. I sold that edition out. I printed 1,000 copies. And a manuscript scout bought one of them and took it to McGraw-Hill, and I quit my job.
You mean you were able after that to quit your job?
Yeah, they gave me...
Oh, they gave you an advance?
They gave me an advance, yeah.
On another book?
No, on this one. Oh. I got to get busy and get another advance, too. Or I'll have to get a job again.
I remember some people being, really interested, you know, at the time when the book was, just before the book was picked up by McGraw-Hill, when it seemed like there was going to be a market at last for gay books.
Yeah.
And everybody was kind of gung-ho about your book getting there.
Yeah.
Apparently you've got a lot of friends who are gung-ho about the book.
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell the German audience, at least, and this program, by the way, for those of you lesbian listeners out there, is also being filmed for German television. Maybe you could sort of tell people how things happened.
What do you mean?
Well, in the book, the plot and all that.
Oh.
Because there must be a lot of people out there who haven't read it.
Oh, tell them the plot?
Well, just, sort of enough to make them interested, but not, you know.
Well, it's about these two young women in Connecticut in 1816 who meet and fall in love and get scared and part and get back together again and go off to the West, which is New York State, and
that was the West.
That was the West, yeah.
Western New York State?
No, Eastern.
1816.
Actually, they were going to go to Genesee, but they stayed in Greene County instead. It wasn't as far west as they meant to go, but it was sort of based on real people. But I couldn't find out very much about the real people, so I had to make up most of it.
That must have been fun.
It was. Yeah, it was fun.
Did you have to do a lot of research?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to me, the idea of any place in New York State ever being considered the West.
Well, Western New York was really West. I mean, it was really frontier.
Well, it wasn't
possible.
Everything.
It wasn't possible to settle Western New York until after the War of 1812.
What happened then? What changed it?
I'm not sure. One of the things I learned in my research was don't look up any more than you absolutely need to know. Look it up as you need it. Like, how long did it take a sailing ship to go up the Hudson River? Go to the library and look that up. But don't learn the whole history of the Hudson River.
Because I never
would have got the book written. Yeah.
Because I remember I was so surprised. I was doing some anthropological research, and the woman I was working for, well, she didn't know how to use a screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been living in this country for 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out she didn't, I said, well, what have you been doing? And she says, well, in Europe, the handyman always used the screwdriver, not us.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that there are cultures and people who have lived for thousands and thousands of years on Earth without screwdrivers or safety pins or sanitary napkins. And and there was a time when the West of New York was considered West.
Uh-huh. Wow. I'm still pretty impressed with sanitary napkins.
But screwdrivers or something. She said, I remember she said, you Americans are born with screwdrivers extending out of your hands.
Ooh. She probably didn't mean that kindly.
How so?
I don't know. I suspect that it's a mark of some kind of elegance not to know how to do things.
You mean it was sort of a class thing?
Mm-hmm, I suspect.
Yeah, she used to be pretty upset with me whenever I'd reach into my back pocket and pull out a Swiss Army knife.
Whether it was because of the knife or the pocket, you could wonder.
It was. Well, she felt the gesture was sort of lower class male.
Mm-hmm. And it's not right to have a pocket in the first place.
Particularly not a back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was brought up in the wrong circumstances.
Me too.
Where were you brought up?
Michigan. I wish I knew more than I do. I would love to be omnicompetent. I've been listening to this car program on BAI, you know, and I just sit there and listen and listen and listen and try to learn about cars. So many things I wish I knew.
Well, watching the engineers in the station, I feel, you know, like hopelessly incompetent. There's one guy was explaining to me, theoretically, how it is possible to defraud the telephone company.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh, yeah.
And apparently his hobby is electronics, and has been for years, and he knows all about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he would explain the simplest elementary thing to me. And to him, it was the simplest elementary thing. But to me, it involved a whole realm of knowledge that he was drawing on that I had absolutely no inkling.
Yeah. Anything like that just leaves me. I was very impressed at all these little expert tinkerings they've been doing.
You mean like with that camera over there?
Yeah, like how do they learn how to do this stuff? They go to school? I mean, they go to... what would it be? What school would you go to?
They're born with videotape cameras coming out of their shoulders.
I see.
And, well, the guy I was talking to had been practicing electronics things for years, and you can get these books, like in Lafayette Electronics or something.
Yeah, but they're all diagrams, I'm afraid. I mean, the book that came with my radio, I'm afraid.
Well, that's not where you start. You start with a simple book called What is Electricity, Book 1? And that's like this thing. And then you go to What is Electricity, Book 2? And when you finish Book 5, then you get into What is Electronics, Book 1? And you work your way up from there.
Mm.
That much I know. But I haven't got through What is Electricity, Book 1 yet.
Yeah. I've been wondering what electricity was. I guess it's time to find out.
Nobody knows. That's one of the things you learn. Nobody really knows what electricity is.
Mm.
But they can do all sorts of tricks with it.
But it's probably the same thing that's in your hair when you comb it and makes it snap.
Right. It's a different kind of electricity.
Is it a different kind?
Well, it's called electricity, see. Oh. But it is electricity. And but it takes it does different things, you see. They call it static electricity.
Oh.
Then there's moving electricity.
I hope you're going to edit all this out of this tape.
I should worry. maybe there are lesbians sitting out there and straight people too who don't know what electricity is or that static and, you know,
if only we could, if only we could take phone calls, people would call us up and explain it to us.
Maybe we'd better put somebody else on. That's as far as I got. And I found out also, like, that European people and a lot of older people, like my parents, who had American educations, didn't have required chemistry and physics and biology in high school. And that was sort of shocking to me. You know, like, so how could they let you walk out without it?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, how can they let you walk out on the street? It's like not teaching you how to tie your shoelaces. And I guess to her it was, you know, for me to know all of this was very esoteric.
Mm. I remember my father-in-law being amazed because I could pound a nail. And he had never seen a woman who could pound a nail. Or so he claimed.
That's a really difficult task, you know.
Well, you know, you're supposed to hit your finger, or you're supposed to bend it over, or miss it completely. but to just plain pound a nail, just supposed to be beyond women.
What part of Michigan did you grow up in?
Northern.
Doesn't mean anything to me, any town?
Or yeah. Traverse City.
Traverse City I have not been through, but seen on maps.
Yeah, it's a nice town. It grows cherries, mostly. And it's kind of surrounded by hills, and in the spring the cherry blossoms are all in blossom. And Lake Michigan is there.
Is it far from Wisconsin?
Well, it's the other side of Lake Michigan from Wisconsin.
Because I knew a woman who looks like you who came from Wisconsin.
Yeah? Where is she?
In New York at yeah. Barnard College. Mm. How did you get here?
To New York?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my lover and I came. Skipped the Midwest and came here.
And you found it somewhat oppressive in the Midwest?
Oh, somewhat. Well, I don't know. We discovered that a lot of our oppression was in our own heads, of course, and that we wouldn't have needed to be as careful as we thought we had to be.
In Traverse City?
Oh, no, this wasn't Traverse City. That's just where I grew up. This was in Illinois. We were so scared. And New York is so great. I still can't get over how free and good I feel in New York. I've been here about 11 years now.
I guess it's hard for me to realize because I was born and raised here.
You probably long to go to the country, do you?
Yes.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Well, I'm not longing to go to a small town, you know.
An actual farm you want to go to. Mm-hmm.
Well, just, you know, I wouldn't want to be that far from the city. I mean, that's cutting too much umbilicus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to have some place where I have a little fresh air now and then.
I have fresh air in my apartment.
You have an air conditioner?
No, I wouldn't dream of having an air conditioner. I live on the sixth floor, and the air comes in off the Hudson, and it's fresh and lovely. And if you go to the country, you don't get fresh air at all, because it's all closed up and heated, and you don't want to waste your hostess's heat, so you don't open the window.
Oh, you mean in the winter?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I always go out for long walks when I'm in the country.
Oh.
Even in the worst weather.
Mm.
And I suppose if I were living out there, I might not do that.
No, you probably wouldn't.
But I still want to get away. Right, I've been saying that for 29 years now.
Yeah, in the city you have to walk. You know, you come to the city from the country you're really in no shape to walk because you use a car all the time. You have to be strong to live in the city. You have to be able to walk. You have to be able to climb stairs.
And you have to be able to overcome all the pollution in order to do it.
Yeah.
That's wild. It hadn't occurred to me, you know, that people would take cars everywhere.
Sure they do.
I mean, I've heard about it, but I thought that was just, you know, like corrupt suburbanites, not real country people.
Sure, real country people take the car everywhere they go. They don't walk.
But what good is that? Why live in the country if you're not going to use it? They should move out and let the city people come. I mean, that's a waste of nature's resources, all that fresh air that could be in and out of your lungs.
Yeah.
Did you do much writing when you grew up? You know, like as a kid?
When I was a kid? Not a hell of a lot.
Mm.
I hadn't yet grasped the concept of rewriting. And I wrote these things and they weren't very good and I put them away and I didn't realize that I could work on them, you know. That it isn't just magic. If it's good, it's good because you make it good. I didn't know that.
Because what happened with me is I would write these poems and my mother would find them or my sister and they'd make fun of them. But since I didn't understand what I was trying to do, I felt I didn't understand the poetry. I could tolerate their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in other areas of my life, I felt much more put down because I'm not sure exactly how to phrase it. It's like they could get to me on everything else but that. That somehow I had erected some kind of mental barrier where I felt they really didn't understand it enough, and that's why they were putting it down.
Boy, I wish I'd had that, because they could really get to me. And I feel so vulnerable. I mean, in my writing, I really feel vulnerable. I don't have any... and then, especially, I didn't have any armor at all or anything like, you dumbbells haven't got a, you know, ear... You can't touch me because you're so stupid. I just couldn't feel that at all, yeah, and I feel it a little bit now from time to time, but...
Well, now I feel more vulnerable because then I felt, okay, I could bury the stuff in my drawer. And if my parents made fun of it, okay, they didn't understand it.
Anyway, what were they doing snooping in your drawer?
Oh, please, they snooped in everything. That's why I had to leave home. They found this rubber object, you see. And that was that. I had to pack and run. But now when I'm showing stuff to people and demanding, you know, and asking for approval, you know, publish this thing.
Mm.
All of a sudden, it's like asking my parents to reverse their opinion.
Yeah.
And where other people's opinion count, whereas when it was just stuff from my drawer, then it could be anything I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And now it's harder.
Yeah. Oh, it's really terrible to have to have approval.
But that's the human condition.
Yeah. And people don't seem to understand that you need approval either. I mean, artists, painters, for instance. Like when I write something, I want two or three people to read it and tell me if they understand it, you know, and if they like it. Because if I'm not getting through, I want to do it over again. You know, I have to communicate. And but painters and people like that tell me, you know, an artist shouldn't give a damn what other people say. You know.
We should be totally self-contained.
Yeah, as long as we like it, that's all that matters. And I really get sort of put down by people who don't understand why I have to have some kind of response, you know. And they can't work in a vacuum.
It's a wonder that any of us survives to be artists.
Yeah.
And instead of giving up the whole struggle and becoming something else. That any of us survives it at all.
I really feel sorry when some young person says she wants to be an artist. I really feel bad about it.
Well, you hear that out there, you all? Yeah, you can feel sorry for us and send contributions. Okay, gang, that's about all we're going to have time for. This is Lesbian Nation. Good night. And that was Isabel Miller, and I'm Martha Shelley, the producer. I'll see you next week. Okay.
So, we got through it.
Right. Now, let's see if we can find a joint or a drink or something.